Timber cutting seldom comes without controversy in our region. Timber mills and jobs and clear cuts were once plentiful. Now there are less of all of those, and just about every timber sale finds opponents. A proposal to log land in the Applegate Valley led to the formation of another nonprofit group. This one is called Speak for the Trees and proposes permanent protection for land slated for logging. Its organizers, its founders are with us in the studio here, Matt Musselwhite and Lydia Musselwhite. I assume Applegate Valley residents, Lydia?
Yes.
All right. Thank you both for joining us, Matt.
Thanks for having us.
So tell us about the land you're concerned about here. Where is it?
The land that we're talking about is adjacent to the Siskiyou Crest, and it's pretty high on a hill. It's 110 acres. It's 110 acres of private land, and it's surrounded on three sides by the Rogue River National Forest. There are endemic species that live there, and a hill of second growth forest. They logged about 15 acres of it before we shut them down.
How did you shut them down?
There are not a whole lot of laws that these folks have to follow, but they were not even doing that. I think that the expectation was that they were going to be far out in the timber and no one was going to be there to keep an eye on what they're doing. What they didn't expect was that the neighboring 110 acres owned by six or eight different folks underwent a fair bit of restoration work in the riparian zone. So when they began to bring their machinery through, we were very active, keeping an eye on what they were doing.
And so are you alleging that they were not following the Oregon Forest Practices Act?
I think that even the powers that be came out and took some ganders at that and decided that was in fact the case.
All right. So is there any action coming from the Oregon Department of Forestry, for example?
Well, we went early on before they started logging and talked to them about getting the timber harvest plan so that we could see just kind of what their plan was for handling the fact that they had to drive through a creek in order to take the lumber from the property. And with that information, knowing that we had a fish-bearing stream, that being a protected area, we really wanted to keep an eye on how the logging trucks were dealing with the fact that it was also raining during their time where they were harvesting.
So which creek are we talking about here?
It's a tributary to Yale Creek.
Mm-hmm. Which is a tributary to the
Little Applegate.
Okay.
Right.
Got it. So what you're talking about here, though, can be interesting to lots of people on a number of different levels, though. I mean, how much knowledge did either of you have about the Oregon Forest Practices Act and its application and the rights of anybody to look into things like logging plans?
All that I knew from the outset was that there was the set of laws that was out there, and with the assumption that those laws were meant to protect people and hopefully ideally to protect forest in the sense of a broader spectrum of forest management. And then in reading through it, it just seemed like, I don't know, it was pretty loose. I didn't read through it with like completely fine comb, but just looking at the areas in terms of like when they can log and what's required for private lands logging, that it seemed like there's not much monitoring going on. Like it's just up to the logging company to fill out the paperwork handed in, but there's nobody scrutinizing what's happening on the other end.
And the wolf is guarding the hen house.
Right.
So it's an honor system, is what you're saying. You're just expected to go ahead and comply, and nobody ever really comes out to check, or do they? Do inspectors ever come out to these timber sites?
I'm not sure if they do that on a regular basis, but it seemed like we had to be a very, very squeaky wheel in order to get the Oregon Department of Forestry out there to inspect the creek.
So what things would you recommend for people who are trying to monitor logging near their own homes, for example? And I assume you live somewhere not terribly far away from here, or do you?
No, not terribly far from Ashland and not terribly far from the property in question.
Okay.
As the crow flies, Mount Ashland, the next highest peak on the Siskiyou Crest, Dutchman's, we live on the north face of. So as the crow flies, we're probably only about 20 miles from here. Driving, it's a bit further.
But you're in that drainage then.
We're in that drainage.
General area.
Drainage of Dutchman.
So the question, back to the original question then, I mean, what can you offer to people who might be concerned about application of the Oregon Forest Practices Act around them? I mean, what kind of rights do they have to ask for information and to obtain that information?
Well, the harvest plan is public information, with the exception of where endangered species are, and that you have the right to go in there and request that timber harvest plan. And my experience was that it was not the warmest and fuzziest places to go and ask for that information. I felt like I met with some, I'm not quite sure what the word to use, but I had to extract the timber harvest plan from them, even though it's public property.
Were you challenged for who are you, why are you asking for this?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, I feel like given the nature of some of the work that I do elsewhere, I'm kind of used to that sort of treatment. So I just roll with it and know how to have a good sense of humor and have a good time with it and eventually get the paperwork that I need. But I think for most people, they might end up leaving thinking that they don't actually have a right to those papers.
So where did you have to go to request the information?
In Medford, the ODF office on Table Rock Road.
Okay. So yeah, north of, west of, east of Central Point, I guess, and north of Medford. Got it.
Right.
So let's talk about the land in question here. I mean, how steep is it? I mean, there's land that's already been cut, you mentioned, and then land adjacent to that is what you're trying to protect through Speak for the Trees, Matt Musselwhite?
Yeah. So this land was first logged in 1947. It was ancient forest until then. And then again in 1991, they came back and took the land that was on the bottom, which was really the prime timber. The hills above it were a little more difficult to get to, but they still had the trees that had grown in underneath the canopy of the ancient forest. So there are big trees on those hills, trees that are well over a century old. There are points in this 110 acres that are 45 degrees in its gradient. So it's a very steep hillside, and extraction was going to be difficult for them and very damaging to what topsoil was on those steep rocky slopes.
So 45 degrees of an incline, that's fairly steep. That's halfway to vertical.
It's halfway to vertical.
And aren't there some provisions within the Oregon Forest Practices Act for maximum incline on which logging can take place?
I'm not sure.
That's a good question, but I certainly didn't see anything about that. They put on the plan the how steep it was, but I didn't see that there was anything that would tell you that you were not allowed to take over this gradient.
There are many different ways to go about a logging process. I mean, if you want to be really gentle, you can lift the logs out with helicopter, that sort of thing. I imagine this was not, and that's expensive though, obviously, because of the cost of running a helicopter. So, what kind of operation was going on here?
What they were doing was referred to as overstory removal, mm-hmm. which I think...
they take out the big trees.
They take the big trees and in theory leave the little trees, but in the process of taking out the big trees, the trees that they leave behind are very damaged. And, you know, you just have these kind of spindly suppressed growth trees that are left behind. And in the area that they did log, the 15 or so acres, what's left are trees that I'd be surprised if they survived. So...
We are talking to Lydia and Matt Musselwhite, the organizers of a nonprofit group called Speak for the Trees, about their efforts to preserve about 100 acres of land in the Little Applegate watershed. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about timber cutting in this specific instance and more generally, and the applications of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. Our phone number is on the exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So talk about the formation then of Friends Speak for the Trees, rather, and how you came about deciding this avenue of approach.
I suppose there are about six of us, and one of the biggest parts of it thus far has been a friend of ours from Los Angeles who made a film that documented the last year of how we've been trying to put this whole group together. We were lucky enough to get Chant Thomas on board. Jonathan Major, who is a neighbor, and then there are a whole bunch of folks whose names are not on Speak for Trees as a nonprofit, but who are very active in bringing out the Water Master to see that actually it was a multi-agency approval that would let the timber company take water directly from national forest streams. They had not gotten that approval, and so they were shut down on that issue. Putting this together, really, it was a lot of neighbors who grow organic food, who have organic farms, who have cattle, who milk the cattle, who raise beef cattle, folks who live with the land and are not trying to make their living at the expense of the land. And when they saw these trucks rolling up the hill and then rolling down with the forest that filters the water from the creeks that they take their the water that waters their fields and feeds their farms from, that really, I think, was what cinched it up for us with getting them off the property.
Did you talk to any existing environmental groups? Any, because I mean, there are lots of groups that are interested in the kinds of things you're interested in, preservation of forest and that sort of thing. So, but did anybody's work appeal to you, or was there something very specific to this piece of land that required a new group?
Great question. Yes, a new group was required, basically. And when we heard that the logging was going to happen, we approached a lot of different organizations, land trust specifically, to help us possibly acquire this piece of property. But due to the fact that a logging company owned it and that it's small, it's got second growth on it. And well, it's small by like the Trust for Public Lands, the great organization that's local here, this Southern Oregon Land Conservancy. We had to own the land prior to being able to put a conservation easement on it. And so what we ended up noticing was that there was just kind of this hole in a lot of the bigger land conservation organizations for small kind of marginal properties to be acquired and to place some kind of conservation easement and forest management plan on them. So what we looked in creating Speak for the Trees was to kind of create something that could specialize in these little parcels or smaller tracts of land and let the big organizations deal with the bigger pieces of land.
It's sort of interesting to hear it described as a small marginal property, because I'm sure right. You don't feel that way living as close to it as you do.
Right, I don't. And then, you know, for most people who say maybe they own just a small parcel in Ashland, the thought of 110 acres sounds monumental, but organizations like the Nature Conservancy, they're looking for something that either has something very spectacular on a small piece like that, or they're looking for thousands of acres.
Is that the issue then, Matt Musselwhite? That, I mean, it's not very big and it's not terribly spectacular, it sounds like. Is it really exciting to look at this land? It's not like going to Yosemite or something. Second growth timber, basically, right?
It is second growth timber, but I think a big part of it also is what it's attached to. It is attached to the ancient forest. It actually touches the Siskiyou Crest. And so there are, from about, we'll say, 5,000 feet on up, a lot of those trees still remain. There are subalpine meadows above us. And really, what this forest does is it filters the water below. What all forests at that elevation do on the northern exposure is they filter the water that eventually finds its way into our grocery stores, into what we're drinking and how we're bathing and how we're living our lives. But I guess a big part of this also is we're very interested in the tailed salamander. The pine marten is very important to us, and all of these species that they don't benefit us. Like, they don't benefit us economically, but they benefit us in their existence without us in the world above us. So that is very important to us, that these ecosystems remain intact.
All right, let us take a call. We have Pam and Dexter on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to the organizers of Speak for the Trees, Matt Watt Musselwhite and Lydia Musselwhite.
Hi. Well, first of all, I totally empathize with you guys, because as we speak, right across the street from us, they're cutting down a private forest, and we're hearing the crash and thunder of 200-year-old trees. So what I wanted to talk about a little bit was, you know, as private forests, at least in Lane County, they've increased 75% cutting the forest in the last 2 years out in Lane County. And the BLM has a plan, and we just went to a forum. They're doing it all over the state. It's called the Resource Management for Western Oregon. And basically, if Wyden's ONC Act doesn't go through, which would, you know, weaken the Northwest Forest Plan and clear cut 1.6 million acres on our public forests, which are really the healthy forests, they're planning ways to dismantle and get in there and cut those forests. And a thing I found out at this forum was, you know, they're touting that the old growth will be protected, but it's old growth stands. And when I asked what the definition of a stand is, the representative from BLM said, well, if you go to the logger, he might see three or four 200-year-old trees or whatever over 120 years old and not count that as a stand and clear cut it. Whereas if I was there, I might call it a stand, but the individual trees that are that old are not protected at all. And so for people to get more information, and there's a deadline on March 31st to comment on it, and they're going to do like a series of comment periods as they get more refined in their plan, but this is like the first stage. But, you know, this whole idea that, I think we should take the private forests and we should boost them up to have the protections of the Northwest Forest Plan. And there's this, you know, the growing awareness that deforestation is the second biggest cause for climate change, and we need massive reforestation. So instead of protecting our forests more, they're trying to dismantle these carbon sequestering, water filtering, air cleaning, you know, biodiversity, wildlife habitat forests to be more like private forests. So, I speak for the trees, too, and the forests, and I commend you guys, and I just think we need to really be vigilant and and now's the time because, like I said, all it was 75% increase in the private forest in our area. And I don't know what's going on in Southern Oregon, but it's really disturbing up here in Lane County. So maybe my question is, has the private forest been increased in their logging down there? And I'll listen on
the
radio.
Wait, before you go, though, Pam, the March 31st comment deadline is for what again?
It's for the BLMs. The Resource Management for Western Oregon Plan.
Okay. I'll see if we can find a link to that.
Like I said, yeah, there's going to be several phases. This is like the first phase. Mm-hmm. But not many people know about it. In Portland, only 13 people showed up. We had about 30 people in Springfield.
Okay. I appreciate you talking about that, and we'll get your question answered. Thanks for that, Pam.
Thank you very much. That's very important, and it's actually a much bigger issue than what we're talking about. We've been referred to as NIMBYs, which is okay, and this is something
not
that's close to us.
Not in my backyard. Mm-hmm.
Not in my backyard is what that stands for. But if folks in all of these areas were more had a bit more interest in what was happening behind them, then this, I think, could be as big as what you're talking about, and we're talking about millions of acres with the ONC are planning to take out. So that's a huge issue, and it's definitely bigger than us.
All right, so I want to understand again, the land you're talking about that led to the formation of Speak for the Trees in the Little Applegate area is, there were the original logging area was 15 acres owned by one entity, and then the other 100 are owned by somebody else?
No, they're all owned. It's 110 acres, that mm-hmm. 15 of which have been logged already, but their plan was to log the entire 110 acres before our community efforts basically had them stop.
Okay. Have you had direct discussions with the owners then?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what's, I mean, have they been relatively cordial? Have they gotten ugly at times?
We've been in contact with one of their foresters, and I would say that we've had a pretty good working relationship the entire time.
Mm-hmm. So what is the plan going forward? I mean, there's a specific plan for what you want to do with Speak for the Trees on this particular chunk of property, right?
Well, so we've raised $60,000 to date. We need $156,000 to buy this parcel. We have a $50,000 matching grant. So we've raised 30, and we've had 30 donated, which puts us a little bit over a third of the way through. Our plan is to turn this 110 acres into a preserve held by a nonprofit, put a conservation easement on it, trails, where it's going to be a public area open to people, but it's going to be protected from the harsh extraction that these forests have seen under this timber company's command. This timber company owns 20,000 acres, and this is one of the last sections that they haven't logged heavily. And this speaks to what the last caller said. There was a time when most of the lands that were being cut were public forests. And as that dried up, as they cut those forests and as the spotted owl became a bird that needed protection, these timber companies then started to log their own private land. So this company has logged to the ground, to the stump, all of its acreage is on the verge of going out of business. So the next step is that either someone's going to buy these lands and protect them, or another larger timber company that will be much more difficult to defeat will buy all these lands, let them sit fallow for 40 years, and then come back.
Wait for trees to grow up and cut them again.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the diversity there. You mentioned salamanders and martens and things like that. Given that the land has already been cut over once, does it retain any of the elements of an ancient forest, or is it pretty much a monoculture plantation?
It definitely has some of the... I guess, what would you call that? You know, it has some of the trees from before. They didn't completely clear cut it, so it has seed trees. So there are some trees that once stood with the ancient forest that are existent there. And so I think it's in pretty, I mean, it's on its way to becoming more of an ancient forest as long as it doesn't get logged again. And I think given that it hasn't been logged and a lot of the areas around it have not been logged recently, is that it's kind of acted like a refuge in some ways for a lot of species.
This seems like a pretty good deal, $156,000 for 110 acres of land.
Right.
This is what we need help on. We have a website. It's www.speakforthetreesoregon.org. And on this website, there's a film that shows this story a bit more fully. It was made by our friend Dean Hahn in Los Angeles. And that film has put us on a pretty good path towards raising the rest of the money. This was definitely one of the reasons that we wanted to come here, was to speak on the radio about it and raise awareness about this specific 110 acres.
Is there a deadline facing you, a time by which you must have the $156,000 in hand ready to present to the current owners?
It's looking like June. June 15th is the first date that they can put wheels on the ground to begin logging that land. They left the hill, August 2 years ago, 2012. So now that it's 2014, they gave us 1 year to try to get the money together, and it's not unlikely that they're filing paperwork right now to come in to finish the job.
All right, so who will own the land, and so there'll be the ownership and easement, both?
Right, through Speak for the Trees, with the exception unless we find a private owner who wants to buy the property and then have Speak for the Trees hold the conservation easement.
Okay, but then you would be paying the owner for the conservation easement as opposed to paying for the land itself. Right? Isn't there some
right.
cash transaction?
Well, the owner would, in theory, the owner would be paying for the conservation easement.
Right.
So that's also how it works through the other organization, like Southern Oregon Land Conservation.
All right. So speakforthetreesoregon.org, and it looks like you need about two-thirds of the $156,000 between now and June.
Right.
All right. So Matt Musselwhite and Lydia Musselwhite, founders of Speak for the Trees, organizers is the term you prefer. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange to explain the situation.
Awesome. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Take care.
Peace.
That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk about the Siskiyou Film Fest and more environmental issues in hour number two.